FYI, this podcast contains spoilers.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 445 of the podcast that goes snicked. I'm your host, Jason. Sounds like a broken toilet Venable. And it's a flashback episode. It's going to be Killer Filler 1993. And really the only killing going on is the body count. Otherwise it's mostly just regular filler. So we're going to cover a SNCcast record 21 comics from 1993 and a couple of these MCPs, maybe early 94. I probably should have checked that, but you know, there you go. I'm not entirely sure is accurate because I'm trying to remember now how many of the comics we actually talked about during stuff like Inferno and Infinity War. I know there are more than 21 issues, but I know I didn't read all of them or grade all of them, I don't know. Anyway, it's the most non-event comics for sure that we've ever covered in a single flashback episode, and it's a lot. You know, as I mentioned before, you know, 1993, we're kind of in the heyday of Wolverine's ubiquity in the Marvel lineup, and just a whole lot to cover and talk about. And you know, there's not a whole lot of import here, so I wouldn't expect a real long episode. I mean, I haven't done it yet. You will have the benefit of actually seeing how long the episode is if you want to check it out. But I don't imagine it'll be much more than just a normal episode. It definitely won't be a bonus episode, but I don't imagine it'll be too long. And, you know, like I said, there's not a whole lot that's important that happens in these stories. It's also not a whole lot of good. I mean, there's various degrees of kind of okay on a lot of these, so I won't be going real deep dives really on anything. You know, there's not even like a whole lot of stuff to make fun of. It's just kind of, there's a couple of things that stick out, but for the most part, just a very kind of blasé run of comics. I will make my coverage as interesting as possible. But also, I kind of view one of these episodes, I kind of like the ones, if you're following along with the 90s Wolverine stuff, or if you've been following along since his debut and are doing the flashback episodes and keeping up, this is kind of one of those episodes where I'm reading these comics and you don't have to. I will definitely keep the listeners here abreast of what's going on, like plot-wise and the one or two maybe important character beats. But there's just not a lot to really talk about or to even make fun of a whole lot. So we will probably, you know, blitz our way through these 21 issues. But yeah, it's just kind of a smattering of stuff. That's why we're calling it Killer Filler, because it's a lot. And it's a lot of this kind of stuff. So where we're going to start off first is a little bit of a cheat. But I am counting it, because I've been reading the series anyway. And that's in Fantastic Four, number 376. So, this is script plotted and penciled by Tom DeFalco and Paul Ryan. So, in other words, DeFalco doing the script, Ryan doing the pencils, and they share a story credit. That's how that probably breaks down. I'm like 99% sure I'm right on that. Dan Bulinani on inks, Jack Morelli on letters, Gina Going, where's she going? On colors, Pat Garrahy, assistant editor, Ralph Macchio, editor, and Tom DeFalco, him again. And this is To a Future Darkly. Now on the cover, also by Paul Ryan, we have Elijah the Laser Fist in the corner box. And then on the regular cover, we have a busted up living room and a guy in armor shooting Sue Storm with Kirby Crackle, Reed trying to wrap him up, and poor little Franklin looking on in shock and horror. And above the logo, it says, the most unexpected shock issue of the Fantastic Four. Now, this cover is pretty good. So here's kind of what happens in this issue, right? So, Reed's time-hopping daddy, Nathaniel Richards, tells the gang of Bleak Futures such as Days of Future Past featuring Wolverine. And he's fighting to prevent all of these bleak futures, this myriad of futures he wants to prevent. And so we get a little panel of Wolverine and of course a grown-up Franklin, because he's been added to the Days of Future Past mythos as well. So anyway, unfortunately, to do so, Nathaniel must remove Franklin from this timeline. So after a fierce scuffle, he succeeds. But then moments later, while Reed and Sue are grieving, an older Franklin returns. Oh, and also lots of Fantastic Four subplots. There's the whole thing, you know, we talked about when Al was on, about, you know, Wolverine slashing Thing's face. So we're dealing with that. He's still got his helmet on, and but he's also worried that his face is getting worse, like it's not healing right. Then, of course, we have Alicia return and trying to redo the relationship with Ben. But then that makes a love triangle with Sharon Ventura, who was a lady thing and now is Ms. Marvel because she had the hots for Ben while fake Alicia was married to Johnny. And then, of course, fake Alicia, Elijah, the laser fist, is back in her Skrull form, trying to decide whether she wants to marry Johnny or murder him. And also, yeah, she's pregnant with Johnny's baby. And then there's also the whole thing where Johnny Storm almost blew up Empire State University, and so he's wanted, and he turns himself in and is going to be represented by Matt Murdock. And then also the Fantastic Four are having financial troubles and end up having to sell or give over a bunch of patents, one of which leads to Sentinel upgrades, which helps lead to the future that Nathaniel's trying to prevent. So there's all these kind of subplots swirling around. The art's fine, and the story's not too bad. I'm going to give Fantastic Four 376 3 out of 6 claws. I mean, it's a pretty good issue, but not necessarily the best. So that's that one. All right, now moving on to the main Wolverine series. And I apologize that Mr. Wilson's not here to talk about this with us, but it made the most sense for scheduling and everything to squeeze these in with all these other issues. So at least we had something to kind of anchor the episode on. So we're going to talk about Wolverine 72, 73, and 74. First up is Wolverine number 72. Sweeping Giant is written by Larry Hama, with pencils by Dwayne Turner, inks by Joe Rubenstein, letters by Pat Brosseau, and colors by Kevin Summers. Now on the cover by Dwayne Turner, we have a close-up on a Sentinel head, and he's holding a fist, and in his clenched fist is Wolverine, who's very, very mad, and screaming again. Dwayne Turner really likes screaming Wolverine. But it's a pretty good cover. I actually like it quite a bit. So, in this one, at Xavier's request, Wolverine and Jubilee return to the Australia outback to check out the Reaver base that was destroyed by At Xavier's request, Wolverine and Jubilee return to Australia outback to check out the Reaver base that was destroyed by Fitzroy's future Sentinel. I'll say that real fast. Obviously, as evidence, I cannot. This brings back lots of memories, most of which are bad, of when Jubilee first found Wolvie, and also of Albert and LCD. So Wolvie shuts down the residual power of the base, which accidentally turns on one of the Sentinels, which was in sleep mode. Now, Wolverine and Jubilee seek out Gateway for a ride home. Is that how they got there? They act like they're trying to find him, but they weren't sure he was there. But if they took a Blackbird, why wouldn't they just take that home? It's not really sure why they're looking for Gateway. But anyway, he's not around, but his energy trace is. Jubilee touches it and gets pulled through space and time to the day her parents died. It wasn't an accident, as she had thought, but thugs looking for the other Asian Lees next door. That may be a little spotty, but we're going to go with it, right? So, two Asian-American families with the last name of Lee live right next door to each other. The gangsters mistake Jubilee's family for the other family, who have some problems, and they actually take them out for a ride and drive their car off the cliff, so it wasn't an accident. Wolvie's able to pull Jubilee back as the Sentinel catches up with them. Due to cybernetic, quote-unquote, science stuff, this Sentinel is philosophical and decides he doesn't need to hunt mutants, but needs to use Gateway's energy to erase humans, of course. Wolverine doesn't like that, so he attacks, but the Sentinel grabs and threatens to snap Jubilee's neck. So he grabs Jubilee and he's like, hey, I'm going to flick her head off. He literally looks like he's going to flick a booger off his finger, but it's Jubilee. And so he threatens to snap her neck if Wolverine does not surrender. So, like I said, not a whole lot to go on. The art's pretty nice. Not as many like stick out moments like with really nice Wolverine poses as maybe the previous arc in the Savage Land, but also nothing that's worth like mocking at all. The story is pretty interesting. It ties in some stuff, right? Like with Uncanny X-Men 281, with Fitzroy, you know, taking out the Reavers and Donald Pierce, which more that'll actually come back in another issue we'll talk about as well. And it also gives Jubilee. It fills out her past a little bit, right? So instead of just being an orphan who was raised by neighbors, now we know that the family that took her in was actually the intended targets all along. And I guess no one ever followed up on that. I guess the gangsters reported success to their bosses that were taken at face value, because the other family that should have been threatened was not, and Jubilee was raised by them. But anyway, she finds out what happens to her parents. Not only that, she sees the guys who did it, because of the time stream, she's able to actually be at her house at the time, whereas before she was not. She was away with some friends at the mall. That's where she goes back to when she eventually runs away, right? So that's cool. It gives Jubilee some kind of more depth, and that's neat. And the art's pretty good. You know, I will say this issue by itself, I would give 5 out of 6 claws. I thought it was a really strong issue. And I really enjoyed it. And even the Sentinel part, which is going to get a little wacky over the next couple issues, starts off pretty good. I mean, it is kind of weird. It's just kind of like, oh yeah, I was in this base and I got splashed by science juice, so now I have deep thoughts. So that's, you know, kind of convenient and weird. But other than that, I mean, it's a pretty excellent issue. So we're going to move on to number 73. Now, 73 is, I think, mostly the same stuff. Well, a little bit different. So Larry Hama, of course, on the script. Dwayne Turner does breakdowns. Joe Rubenstein still does the inks, but he's actually credited with finishes, so he probably did some of the final art as well. Or used the inks to finalize the art. Maybe more than just tracing, you know, he actually did some drawing in there. Pat Brousseau does the letters. This time, Paul Becton is the colorist. And this is the Formicary Mound. Now, on the cover by Dwayne Turner, we have Wolverine, of course, yelling. And he's also slicing up some cybernetic... I think they're supposed to be dingoes, like Pierce had in the Outback, but they are... Because I think it's a tongue, but it looks like a tusk. It kind of makes it look like cybernetic warthogs. But I do believe they are the dingoes that Pierce has. It's a pretty nice cover. I mean, overall, pretty good. So, in this one, the Sentinel, Wolverine, and Jubilee, Gateway to the Anthill. So the Anthill was a Sentinel base back in the... I think it was the 60s and the 70s. Remember that story when the X-Men kind of ended the first time, when the Sentinels were going to fly into the sun and destroy it? And then there was also another story where they tried to do it again with the Avengers, and the X-Men and Avengers, X-Men, the comic-less at the time X-Men and the Avengers were able to stop them in the Anthill, which was their base in Australia, not very far from where we are now. So anyway, I guess it's far enough across the continent or across the Outback, they go ahead and using Gateway energy to go there. Wolverine is able to cut Jubilee loose from the Sentinel hand. He actually cuts the whole hand off and then kind of more carefully slices the fingers so Jubilee can get out. But the Sentinel knocks them both out after some fighting and goes about his plan to uncover the anthill, revive the Sentinels, and restart the plan yet again to shoot a ray to cause solar flares and wipe out all life on Earth, thus making any more mutations impossible. Now, there are other science fictions that might argue that solar flares would not wipe us out, but just cause more freaky mutants. But anyway, this is not that reality. This is this reality where the solar flares would kill everybody, and if there's no people, then there's no mutations, right? They haven't seen Jurassic Park yet. They don't know that life will find a way. But anyway, while Wolverine heals, he argues against Jubilee avenging her parents, and basically warns her that she doesn't want to carry that around. Jubilee's dead set on, we have to save the world from the Sentinel, and then I'm going to go back to L.A., find these guys, and light them up, literally. And Wolverine's like, no, you don't want to do that. He's being a good mentor here, trying to say that, you know, even if we do decide to do something, you don't want to kill him, you don't want to carry that around the rest of your life. You know, you're a good kid, you don't want to turn that corner. And after he argues with the parents, he also wins a staring contest with wild dingoes, not the cybernetic ones, the natural ones. So then they go to the anthill themselves and get the upper hand on the Sentinel, and they think they're going to win, but then the reactivated Sentinels show up. So again, art's pretty good, and the story's still pretty solid. I didn't like it quite as much as the first one, though that scene of Wolverine growling against the dingoes is pretty great. There's one, like, horizontal panel that focuses on his mouth. It's just his teeth and a little bit of lip and then a big grr that comes out the rest of the panel. It's pretty great. And then there's a couple other kind of artistic highlights. But for the most part, the art's still really good. And the story's still pretty fun. So I didn't like it quite as much as 72, but I'm still going to give it a very solid 4 out of 6 claws, which is going to take us to Wolverine number 74. So this one, we get some change up, and the change is not for the better. But this is Jubilee's Revenge, still written by Larry Hama. Jim Fern does the pencils, Art Nichols on the inks, Pat Brousseau does the letters, and Marie Javins does the colors. Now, I don't know if there was a plan switch here, and they just needed another issue to get to what's going to be 75, or if Dwayne Turner left unexpectedly to go do Stormwatch at Image, I'm not sure. But either way, Jim Fern is here, and he also does the cover, and this cover is awful. We have, of course, the logo and the Sentinel crouching in front of the logo, shooting red energy out of his hands. It looks like fire. Then we have Wolverine literally hopping away with his hands around Jubilee's waist. He's carrying her away, and he looks terrible. He looks like Clayface Wolverine. I mean, he almost looks like Liefeld style, but if everything was bloated, like he had too much liquid. It was carrying too much water. So it's a bloated Liefeld Wolverine, and it looks gross. And it's just as bad inside. Wolverine, I mean, it's really funny because Jubilee doesn't look terrible, but Wolverine looks awful through this whole issue. Just gross. I don't like it. Anyway, so there's a Sentinel fight as they chase our heroes all through the anthill. Have some Benny Hill music. And when Jubilee refuses to finish a Sentinel, even though it's just a robot, it's still a person, Sentinel Pie, because his designation is really like 3.14 dot dot dot, decides to destroy his plan, erases it from all the Sentinel databanks, and decides to spend the next 2,000 years trying to see if he can program emotions in himself. So he's going to basically go into hibernation, inspired by Jubilee's mercy. He sends Wolverine and Jubilee back to L.A., where they do decide to track down her parents' killers. Wolverine reluctantly agrees. They find them and rough them up But at the end, Jubilee again cannot kill them. So two examples of her unable to pull the trigger, so to speak. She asks Wolvie if both these examples make her weak, but of course he says no. Her compassion actually saved the world, and it's okay that she doesn't avenge her parents. She knows the truth, and you know maybe these guys can still get what they have coming. It doesn't say whether they might try to turn him over to the police or anything, but at the end, Jubilee decides not to path them to death, and Wolverine is again a really good mentor and says, you know what, that's okay. If you had the killer instinct and had just destroyed all the Sentinels, who knows what would have happened in Australia? It was your compassion that inspired the Sentinel Pi to, you know, devote himself to trying to program emotional capacity. So your compassion was the hero of the day. And so that also means you can't kill the people that killed your parents. I think that's a fair trait. And I really like that part. Unfortunately, the art is just so bad. It's terrible. It's really, really bad. So I'm going to give it 2 out of 6 claws. I thought about giving it 3 just for the writing, like I sometimes do for the art. You know, sometimes I'll say it's not very good, but the art's really good, so I'll give it 3. But I will say the ending of the Sentinel part was a little rushed and iffy, so I think I'll go ahead and give the whole comic 2 out of 6 claws. Quite a drop from the first 2 parts of the story. Most of it because of the art, but maybe not entirely. Maybe like 90%. Alright, so now we're going to do a nice long run of Marvel Comics Presents. So we're going to do 2 stories, which will cover 131 to 142. So strap in and get ready, because we're going to start with Marvel Comics Presents 131. Now this is going to be These Foolish Things, written by James Professor Felder, art by Dennis Jensen, letters by Joe Rosen, and colors by Pat Garrahy. And I apologize, this one's actually standalone. So it'll be 3 stories that we'll cover overall. The Wolverine cover for this one is by Henry Candelario. And he's been doing, if I remember right, some of the inks for Greg Capullo on his early Marvel stuff, particularly on the Quasar stuff. Now, I will say, you know, sometimes when you see a guy whose inks can be strong, you see them drawn, it looks like the guy that they were drawing. I would say this looks more like Derek Robertson than anything else, but it's a pretty nice cover. I mean, Wolverine's short and squatty, but in a good way. He's got some big old arms, and his costume is battle-torn. It almost looks like he's ripped his way through either a fence or some barbed wire. There's some billows of smoke in the background. He's lurching towards the reader. That's a pretty nice cover, I mean, overall. Alright, so we catch up to Wolverine in a Madripoor bar fight. Tiger invites him upstairs and tries to seduce him. He resists her advances, but she has a job for him. To retrieve a box stolen by Sapphire Styx. Remember her, that mutant energy vampire from an earlier MCP story? What Wolverine does, he's successful. Upon returning it to Tiger, she reveals the box was originally stolen from Clan Yashida. She opens it and gives Logan the Natsuki from, I don't know if I'm saying that right, Georgie maybe can fill me in, but from Mariko's kimono. This makes Logan very happy, but he still won't sleep with Tiger. So the art's not bad. The story is short and sweet. It's a nice one-off. Of course, I love references to Mariko. And I love seeing Wolverine super. He's so happy he jumps away and his hat falls off. The art's fine. But he gets a nice keepsake from Mariko. And that was stolen, and he's able to recover it without even knowing what it is, and then Tiger gives it to him. It's weird that Tiger thought the correct emotional response to here's something that reminds you of your dead lover, let's have sex. It's a little odd. And honestly, if there's anything I don't like about the writing, It almost writes Tiger Tiger's sexuality not in an empowered way. Like, she's in charge, but, like, she's just, oh, I'm so horny for Wolverine. Like, she has no control, and I don't really like that. But anyway, I think overall, it's still a nice, sweet story. The art's fine. I'm going to give this issue overall 4 out of 6 claws. All right, so next up, we have Marvel Comics Presents 132, which will begin a 6-part story of Brothers in Arms. This first chapter is Trouble in Paradise. So this is going to be written by Dan Slott, art by Steve Lytle, letters by Ole Higgins, and then colors by Steve and Marianne Lytle. And the cover is also by Steve Lytle. And it's a really cool cover. It's like a green background with lighter green circles, like concentric circles. And then we have Wolverine almost entirely in shadow with a little bit of light from his cigar highlighting like part of his face. And then in color, we have a floral lei around his neck with pink and yellow flowers. It's a great cover. Like, it's really, really fantastic. I like it a lot, actually, quite a bit. So, what about the story? So Wolverine is vacationing on a tropical island, Comacoy. So, of course, he gets involved with the Death Cult, trying to bring about unspeakable darkness. He saves a sacrificial girl from the Coven assassins. The Coven are this Death Cult. But he also smells cyber. He smells those adamantium farts. The girl, of course, thanks him by passing her mark onto him. And it's inferred that maybe that happens sexually. Like, they have sex and that gives him the mark, like a mystical STD, but it's not shown on the page, it's just inferred. But anyway, this mark will attract the Coven, who then we meet at the end. And we can kind of talk about their design. So Steve Lytle's designs for the Coven are pretty nice. Very 90s, but, yeah, of course, we have Cyber, and then we have, I don't know if they say everyone's name or not. There's Fetish, who has, like, a tribal swimsuit and then, like, a cape. And then there's Blood Shadow, who looks like an Image character. He's really like all in black, but he has a black cape with red interior trim. And then almost think like the Archangel facial design, but black, just black and red. And then there's a guy that looks like I don't remember his name. Shoot, the Reaper, I think, from Batman Year 2, and his name is Vex, I think. And he looks pretty cool. Actually, the art and the colors by the Lytles is pretty great. The story is fine. There is a part where Wolverine says, what does he say here? He sees a lady jogging on the beach, the lady's about to save, and he says, it looks like the perfect chance to show why I'm the best there is at what I do. So Wolverine maybe has a different idea of what he's best at. And then there's a part where he gets really mad when he's fighting the first layer of Coven assassins. They mess up his hat, stab a knife through it, and he gets really mad, talks about how he needs a new hat. Very Indiana Jones there, but it's pretty fun. I'm trying to look and see here. Yeah, all right, I'll save and do this story at the end. Okay. So that's going to take us to Marvel Comics Presents 133, which will also give us something else, because we're going to have a Sabretooth story in this one as well. Actually, it's an Iron Fist story that has Sabretooth, but we'll talk about that. So Iron is a good segue. So in the early 90s, of course, Iron Fist comes back during John Byrne's Namor run. Of course, John Byrne, one of the earliest pencilers on the Iron Fist book with Chris Claremont, and then of course also did some of the Power Man and Iron Fist stuff as well, and definitely has a love for the character. So when he has his Namor book, I think there were other plans for Cage, but he is allowed to bring Iron Fist back. And then, after he comes back, Cage gets his own solo series after he comes back in The Punisher, where he goes to Chicago and some more street-level stuff. And then Iron Fist does come in right around this time, and they kind of are reunited, but they don't stay a team. But then Iron Fist, instead of getting his own book, has had a feature in Marvel Comics Presents. And of course, this one, we get a reunion with old Sabretooth, because remember, Sabretooth debuted in Iron Fist, so pretty handy. So anyway, issue 133 has the Wolverine story, Alone Against the Coven, which is part two of Brothers in Arms, by all the same creatives. But then we also have Depths of Despair, the Iron Fist story, part one of four. This one is Opening Gambit. It's written by Tony Macias, pencils by Fred Haynes, inks by Jeff Albrecht, and letters by Michael Higgins with colors by Glynis Oliver. Now, our Wolverine cover is still by Steve Lydell, and it's a great black and yellow cover of Wolverine just slicing his way through the cover, all in black and yellow. It looks really, really great. Another great cover. All right, so our Wolverine story, now marked as the Coven's new sacrifice, Wolverine, because the lady does tell him, she's just not like, oh, I'm going to give this to you and leave. She's like, by the way, I gave you my mark, so the Coven's going to come after you, but I figured you can handle them better. But anyway, instead of waiting for the Coven to track him down, Wolverine decides to take the fight to them first. His goal is to get the Tear of Heaven, a big jewel that looks like a big... What college football game has the big crystal football as a trophy? Not in the national championship, so it goes from bowl to bowl, or is it just a sugar? Anyway, I don't know. It looks like that. It looks just like it. But his goal is to get the Tear of Heaven, not the Eric Clapton song, but the football trophy, and return it to the previous sacrifice, who is the priestess. So the girl he saved is the priestess, and she's trying to save the world. Wolverine cuts through most of the Coven until he gets to Bloodshadow, who can predict his moves. So Wolverine does get knocked out, and he wakes up chained to... dun dun dun, Cyber! So again, art is pretty great. Story is fine. Alright, Iron Fist story. So Iron Fist, Misty Knight, and Colleen Wing are protecting an informant from Yakuza Ninja. Danny struggles to regain his confidence after his return, but is ultimately victorious. Meanwhile, the ninja boss, Shiro, also hires Sabretooth to hunt down and murder the informant whose name is Powers. So, there is a little bit of metatextual criticism I'm going to make, because I don't really like the art in this story at all. I don't think it's good. And the plotting is fine. But, there's a part where Misty says, she talks about Iron Fist struggling with his confidence and says, his reactions are slower, his moves are too defensive, he has to press the attack. He must be hurt, his moves are so stiff. And I just want to say, no, that's just the art. The art is stiff. And it is. But anyway, Sabretooth is nasty here. He even guts his own ninja to establish himself as the Alpha. So once Shiro hires him and says, hey, here's some ninja to help you, one of them maybe talks back a little bit, and Sabretooth guts him and says, I'm in charge here. So it sounds like Sabretooth. So again, I'll rate those stories when we get to the end of them, respectively. So next up, we Marvel Comics Presents 134, the Wolverine story, part 3, Chain Reaction, same creatives, and Iron Fist, part 2, A Fall from Grace, same creatives. So this time the Wolverine cover is by Colin McNeil, and it looks like Wolverine on a wire. Like, have you ever seen a bird on a wire? Like how he's crouched but the wire bends in towards the middle? It kind of looks that way. I think he's actually supposed to be sitting on the logo, which is on the bottom, the big Wolverine logo. But he's crouched on it, leaning forward with his arms crossed in front of him. He's all in red and black, and then he has a big cigar. I don't really like when his cowl fins look like they go straight out to the side, like they look real flat. I prefer them, of course, to curve back. But other than that, some pretty good cover overall. All right, so in the Wolverine story, the chains holding Wolverine and Cyber together are forged from adamantium. Of course they are. Since Wolverine can't cut them loose, he aims his anger at Cyber himself. They fight until the Coven hits them with knockout gas. They wake up tied to the Coven altar and are being lowered into a pit of fiery acid. Dun, dun, dun. Again, art really good. Story, I'm starting to lose interest. The Iron Fist story. While Iron Fist and Misty and Colleen fight the ninja, Sabretooth attacks the FBI safe house. He slices through the agents and kidnaps Powers, the informant. But fortunately, when they get there, Misty had already had a tracker on Powers. So, the art somehow gets worse in this issue. It just keeps getting worse and worse. And the story is becoming more generic and holding less of my interest as it goes. But again, we'll rate it at the end. So next up will be Marvel Comics Presents 135. The Wolverine story, Brothers in Arms Part 4, Off the Cuff. Same creatives. And the Iron Fist story, Debts of Despair Part 3 of 4, Back and Forward. Same creatives. The Wolverine story cover is again by Colin McNeil. This time we have a black background with a green circle. It can be the moon. We have Wolverine literally like slinking into the room, like very sultry. But his face is all in shadow and his hair is long and curly and wavy. So as much as I hate this Wolverine hair, and I do, it's not even the worst Wolverine cover hair of the episode. Some of you may know, it may be, okay, I know what's coming up after this, but yeah, it's not the worst hair we'll talk about, but it's pretty bad. Alright, so in the Wolverine story, Cyber flips the script and cuts the cord holding them above the acid, causing the platform to dip them in, but it burns the bonds, not their adamantium. Of course, that hurts Wolverine more than it does Cyber. Still chained together, though, somehow, because the chains are adamantium and don't melt in the acid, they fight the Coven and steal the jewel. They take it back to the Sun Temple with the priestess, but the Coven regroup and follow them as well. Once in the temple, Cyber pricks Wolvie with a drugged claw, as he tends to do, knocking him out. Turns out he had a key to the chains all along, so he frees himself and takes the jewel. Okay, now for the Iron Fist story. Iron Fist and the Daughters of the Dragon, which are Misty and Colleen, track Powers where they run into Sabretooth and Ninja. A friend of Misty's, which may or may not be Elektra, excuse me, is definitely drawn to look like her. But anyway, this friend, this female friend with black curly hair and red clothes, impersonates the ninja senpai and calls the ninja off. But Sabretooth wants a rematch with Iron Fist, so he does not stop fighting. He's not giving in. He's ignoring the senpai, not throwing in the towel, and that's where we leave off. Alright, so Marvel Comics Presents 136. I think there's a misprint in the credits here. Yeah, there is. Okay. Oh, yeah. All right, so the Wolverine story, anyway, they flip them. The wrong covers have the wrong credits, the wrong inside covers. So the Wolverine story, part 5, Brothers in Arms, is Cat's Game. This time, the only difference is the letters are by John Babcock. And then the Iron Fist story, Debts of Despair, the conclusion, back to the beginning, is by all the... this time the colorist is George Roussis, which is a step down from Oliver, of course. Our cover by Colin McNeil again is pretty great. It's Wolverine in a black room. A close-up on his face as he holds a match up to his cigar with the match giving the only color. It's another great cover. Alright, so in this one, in the Wolverine story, Wolverine cuts the chain out of the wall. He kills Blood Shadow and wraps the chain around Cyber's throat. Cyber unlocks it again, falling into a ravine. We know we'll see him later. The Coven is destroyed. Oh, and turns out the stolen crystal was a fake. A decoy. The end. Alright. I really ended up not liking this story very much. But the art was really good. And just like I talked about on Wolverine 74, there are times when I will grade and grade stuff up because of the art. So I'm going to give this Wolverine story, all six parts, 3 out of 6 claws, but almost entirely for the art, and because the story doesn't suck. It is kind of boring, but it doesn't suck. So 3 out of 6 claws for that. All right, now for the Iron Fist story. The last chapter of it. Sabretooth and Iron Fist, of course, fight for several pages. Danny is weak and distracted and can't summon his Iron Fist, but he punches Sabretooth into a transformer or something? Literally, sparks fly and something explodes, and the explosion collapses the sewer that they're in, because Sabretooth loves fighting in sewers. That's his M.O. In desperation, Iron Fist is able to Iron Fist his way up through the rubble, and of course, this very, very second they leave, Sabretooth's hand also sticks out of the rubble, and that's the end. So, the same Iron Fist story with Sabretooth. Sabretooth is appropriately nasty, and that's fine, but the art is just so bad, and the story is just kind of boring. I'm going to give the Iron Fist story, which features Sabretooth, 2 out of 6 claws. Alright, so now we're going to do the next Marvel Comics Presents story, starting in Marvel Comics Presents 137. So this is Rumble in the Jungle, part 1 of 6. Here, the plot is by Eric Larson. The script and pencils by Chris Marinan. He was a DC guy, was doing a Wonder Woman run at this time, I believe, or had just done one, maybe. Inks by Mike Macklin. Letter by Yul Higgins, and colors by Joe Andreani. Our Wolverine cover is by George Pratt. It's very sketchy looking. We have a naked Wolverine crouching in a white wintry forest. He's all in white in the moonlight. I can't tell if his forearms are in shadow or covered in blood. I think it's supposed to be blood, and it looks like there's some blood leaking down the snow as well. It's not a bad cover. It's fine. Alright, so Wolverine is still on the island of Kamakoi on his tropical vacation, and he's still saving damsels in distress, this time from natives with an alien tongue. But a super-power ape gets the drop on him. So he saves the girl from these natives who may or may not have superpowers, but talking like a bug language. But then this superpower gorilla comes in and knocks Wolverine out from behind. Alright. The art is good. Marin's art is fine. We'll get to the story. Alright, Marvel Comics Presents 138. All the same credits. Rumble in the Jungle Part 2 Arena. The cover is this time by Colin McNeil again. I don't like it. I've been liking this cover so far. This one's pretty bad. It's Wolverine in some green grass stalking towards the reader, all in shadow and the really big flat front fins. I don't care for it. So in this one, Wolverine wakes up in an arena with the Super Ape. They fight. Wolverine is about to deliver a killing blow when a silver-garbed chieftain stops him. Wolverine slices his mask off to reveal from the back a green-haired foe that he immediately recognizes. Now, I thought of a guy with green hair, but thought, he doesn't really have Wolverine stories, so surely that's not it. But we'll see, I guess. And we'll see right now. Marvel Comics Presents number 139. See, we're burning through these things. Rumble in the Jungle Part 3 of 6, Mask. Same credits. This cover is back. Well, it says Colin McNeil again, but this looks more like that George Pratt guy. I'm pretty sure it is. Because it's very sketchy, very painter-y looking, and we have Wolverine crouching on a jungle vine, washing his claws off in some bloody water. Wolverine and the jungle are all in shades of green. And then the water is in red, pink, and black. It looks, I mean, it's pretty cool. I like it a little better than the first one he did. It's a little more interesting. Though his hands are very strange looking, but that's okay. All right. Oh, well, so it turns out the green-haired guy is Doc Samson. I'm trying like mad to remember where him and Wolverine might have a history, and I'm drawing a blank. But anyway, they know each other. But unfortunately for Wolverine, Doc Samson is not in his right mind. So they fight until Samson throws Wolverine through the wall into the jungle. Wolverine stalks around until the Lady Chief Princess zaps him with Kirby Crackle. So, I do want to mention something to Grant, our friend of the show, Grant Richter. Sorry, Grant, I remember your name. I'm trying to remember your Superman Twitter handle. I'm going to have to look it up real fast. I can't remember if it's about Superman or the other one. I'm such a good friend. Oh, my goodness. Terrible. Yeah, it's at About Superman. And the title is Truth, Justice, and Hope. So go follow Grant there. Great guy. Anyway, I want to tell him because on one of the other stories in this issue is a Batroc the Looper story, which is an okay story with okay art. But it's cool because it's in the corner box. But instead of Batroc being in the corner box, all we see are his feet jumping away. I thought it was really fun. By the way, also, there's a new Ghost Rider story, because Ghost Rider is the other feature of Marvel Comics Presents at this time. And this Ghost Rider story is pretty good. It's much better than the Wolverine story. And also, this guy Reggie Jones doing the art is like Mark Teixeira light. So the art's pretty good. The story by King Lynn Kaminsky is pretty good. It was much better than the Wolverine story. So anyway, that's going to take us to Marvel Comics Presents number 140. So, this is Rumble in the Jungle, part 4 of 6, Bedlam. This time, Scott Koblish is the inker. Everything else is the same. The covers by George Pratt again. This is a pretty cool cover. It's Wolverine crouching. He likes to draw Wolverine crouching. He's crouching on a cliff, a green cliff, and there's a dark blue sky, an inky sky with a sliver of orange moon. It looks pretty great. Alright, so in this one, the princess brings Wolverine back to Doc Samson in some sort of alien science lab. They hook him up to the brainwash machine, but for reasons they don't even attempt to explain, Wolverine's mind causes a feedback that not only blows up the machine, but also conveniently frees Doc Samson from his brainwashing. Now, it's possible that they could have said, because of all like the mental blocks in Wolverine's head from the Weapon X program, that the machine didn't work and that caused the feedback. It's actually a pretty good explanation. Unfortunately, one I had to bring to the story myself, because they don't even try to explain it. They're just like, oh, Wolverine's mental state, or whatever, blows the machine up. So then Wolverine jumps through an alien portal. I do also want to ask friend of the show, Andrew Autry, if we have some copyright infringement here, because in this Ghost Rider story, which I do really like, there's the last panel, they bring this evil army, and it's a bunch of skeletal figures in battle armor, and the bad guy calls them his Army of Darkness. Which, of course, is a great movie that has stop-motion skeletons in battle armor. And it's not even like a parody. It's like an actual just a lift, which I don't really like, but maybe it's kind of funny if... I don't know. I guess it depends on who they asked if they could do it or not. But anyway, Andrew, you might enjoy that. I think it's definitely copyright infringement. Alright, cool. Well, we're going to keep going. Marvel Comics Presents number 141. Let's see here. Yep, same creative as the last. Same cover by George Pratt. This one I don't like quite as much. It's not bad. Actually, it's pretty cool. It's cool and messy. But it's Wolverine in a forest in a red blood pond. And he is in his costume this time. He's standing up straight with claws out and his hair's nuts. Actually, the more I look at it, the more I like it. I remember that, and I wrote that in my notes. So, and the same thing happened, right? When I first picked it up, I was like, eh. And then I looked at it and liked it, and I wrote my notes. The more you look, the better it is, and I did it again in real time here. So, fun little podcast experiment there. All right, so here Wolverine fights the aliens on their world, while Doc Samson fights the princess on Earth. Wolverine comes home, blowing up the portal to close it behind him. Should be the end. And I'm going to grade it up to this point. So I'm going to say this story is 2 out of 6 claws. Pretty good art. Not great art, but pretty good. But the story is just dumb. And there's no reason for Wolverine to be a part of it. So that's going to take us to Marvel Comics Presents number 142, our last issue of the episode. Rumble in the Jungle, Part 6 of 6, Afterburn. This one is now fully plotted and written by Chris Marinan. And then everything else is the same. The cover by George Pratt has Wolverine kneeling in a red blood pond. I'm sensing a motif here. Anyway, it's a pretty good cover. So in the story, which by all accounts was actually over, they even kind of say, I guess we're done. Ha ha ha. Wink, wink. Wolverine and Doc Samson try to head home, but the alien super gorilla was on the loose. He's still around, and he goes on the attack. They fight him for a few pages and then bury him in an old jungle temple. All right. If the first story was dumb, this one's even worse. I actually kind of hated it, and it really made no sense to continue the story. I think Eric Larson's idea was done, and Chris Marinan was like, no, but what about the gorilla? We forgot about the gorilla. What about him? We got to do something. And so they do something, and they pull the gorilla in, and it doesn't work. So I'm going to give Marvel Comics Presents 142 1 out of 6 claws. So next up, we are going to talk about a 3-part story called Wolverine and the Punisher Damaging Evidence. So there's definitely some killer filler in here. Lots of death. So this is going to be written by Carl Potts, a longtime Punisher writer. Art by Gary Erskine, not the guy who invented the Super Soldier Serum. Colors by Marie Javins. And then letters by Richard Starkings and John Gauchel, or Gauchel, I'm not sure. The covers are by Erskine, and they're not great. On this first one, first of all, we have like a wallpaper background of little Wolverine and Punisher heads, and then all the dress and words are on the background, and then we have a miniature picture of the cover, and this one is Punisher pointing his guns up, shooting while Wolverine jumps down at him and slices part of his shirt off. Wolverine has a crazy, wild lion mane of hair. It's not as exaggerated on this cover as it will be the next one, so we're still not to the worst hair. But, yeah, Wolverine definitely looks like a lion. Also, I don't like Wolverine in fingerless gloves. If you're gonna do it, then do the normal thing where it's gloves with no fingers. Here he has his normal, like, gloves that come up through most of his forearm, but he's missing the fingers. Also of note, he's in his early 90s, late 80s, early 90s brown and tan, brown and orange costume, but without the cowl. So we already kind of know something's up, and we find out that this takes place in the past. Before the fall of Kingpin in Daredevil 300, and before the death of the Reavers in Uncanny X-Men 281, both of which play a part in this story. So let's get to it. So the Punisher takes out one of Kingpin's cartels in Mexico. The Kingpin laments how expensive the Punisher has been lately. Upon investigating common enemies, Fisk realizes that the Punisher had a run-in with the Reavers, and he decides to try and hire the Reavers to solve his pest problem. Speaking of Reavers, segue, they laid a trap for Wolverine in Hong Kong, but he fights his way out. He does overhear their chatter about going after the Punisher on their next mission, so you know he's got to get involved. So anyway, Pierce and Fisk are negotiating a price, but instead of the Reavers going after Punisher themselves, they're going to sell Kingpin some Reaver tech so he can beef up the cybernetics for damage a villain who was nearly killed by the Punisher. Wolverine returns to New York to warn the Punisher, but is greeted by news headlines of the Punisher being responsible for innocent deaths. Punisher also sees a story on the TV news about the same thing and figures there must be a fake Punisher framing him. Alright, so the art is okay. The story has interesting pieces. I like the connective tissue, the Kingpin story, the Reaver story. Tying it all together to bring in Punisher and Wolverine is interesting. As a concept, I'm not sure the story is that great. We'll get there. Alright, so part 2 of 3, I believe, is all the same stuff. Yes. So, on this cover, we have the same thing. But this time we have Wolverine and Punisher running at the reader with an explosion behind them. And the explosion seems to be propelling Wolverine forward through the air. And this time his big lion mane of hair is flowing wildly behind him. And this is maybe the worst Wolverine hair of all time. So there you go. I hate it. I hate it so much. So here, as Punisher raids more Kingpin operations, we do see Damage going behind him in a Punisher suit, killing innocent bystanders. Wolverine now tracks the Punisher, but finds Damage instead. They fight, but Damage's cybernetics allow him to stay in the fight. Alright, fine. Damaging Evidence, Part 3. Oh, Damage and Damaging Evidence. Ah, there's another play on words. Alright, well, I was going to grade this all together, but I'm going to have a little bit different grade. So, Part 1 and 2, I give 3 out of 6 claws. The art's okay, story's okay, is all fine. Part 3. We have some extra colorists. No first names, but Garahy, Javins, and Mattis do the colors. On the cover, we have the same kind of wallpaper. This time, Wolverine fighting Punisher. It's fine. Alright. So, Wolverine fights Damage for several more pages. He beats him, of course, but gets trapped somehow by a cybernetic harpoon, maybe? It's not real clear. Sniper, another Punisher bad guy, who's been kind of doing stuff in the background in the story, ambushes Punisher at a funeral, but ends up in an open grave. Punisher buries him there. Punisher then finds Wolverine, based on a clue from Sniper, and helps free him from Damage, and then they blow Damage up. They hug without hugging and go back to their own stories. Kingpin collects Damage's head and sends it to Pierce to rebuild. But, of course, this is before the fall of Kingpin and the death of the Reavers. So we get an in-story explanation for why this story is actually pointless. The conclusion is sent to two things that can't be followed up on because both the characters lose their station either through disgrace or death. So the rebuilding of Damage can never happen. And we really, because we placed the story in the past, we completely make it inconsequential. I really don't like it, and I gave this chapter 2 out of 6 claws. Alright, we're coming up towards the end, guys. Almost there. Next up, we're going to cover Fury number 1. Now, the S.H.I.E.L.D., or Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. series, has recently concluded. I'm not sure really what's next for Fury. I know he's going to play a role and the upcoming Fatal Attractions, because we've been seeing the S.H.I.E.L.D. Fury files on the X-Men and Avengers 30th anniversary coming up. But really, this comic is a one-shot that... Well, we'll just kind of get to it. So, it's going to be written by Barry Dutter, pictures by M.C. Wyman, inks... Is he a rapper, I hope? Inks by Chris Ivey and Greg Adams, colors by Christy Scheel, letters by John Workman, logo by Dave Sharp, and cover by Lou Harrison. And the cover is kind of a very 90s like Bloody Fury logo. Then we have Nick Fury in painted color in front of a background of painted people all in green. We have a blowing up helicarrier, a girl in a bikini with a machine gun, go 90s, Baron Von Strucker's head, and then Scorpio with the Scorpio key. That's all in the background. It's okay. It's kind of meh. So basically, this story is just a history recap of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Hydra. It has its new art and new writing, but it's just kind of going through the history of Nick Fury and S.H.I.E.L.D. and Hydra and kind of all how it all comes together and all the high points that you need to know. Basically, it's a one-stop shop for Nick Fury, S.H.I.E.L.D., Hydra, and Von Strucker to get everything you need to know for stories going forward, including one we're about to read. So it's kind of convenient. But, yeah. But it does include a joint mission of Canada's Logan and Nick's S.H.I.E.L.D. predecessor, a Colonel Stoner. Yeah, that's what it says. And their mission is to recover the original Guardian armor, which was stolen by Hydra. So the story is basically a big info dump, lots of rehashed material. The art's not bad. It's kind of hard to grade stuff like this. I'm going to give it 3 out of 6 claws. I mean, it's fine for an animated Wikipedia page. Or not animated, illustrated Wikipedia page. But that's going to lead into our last story of the episode, which is going to be Scorpio Rising. Wolverine and Nick Fury, Scorpio Rising. Now, we did a previous Scorpio story with Wolverine and Nick Fury, which I remember liking, but don't remember much of. And I remember that not being my best episode either, so I apologize for that again. I think I apologized previously, but again. Anyway, this one, so that one was by Archie Goodwin and Howard Chaykin. Luckily, this graphic novel comes with a nice description of what happened last time. So, we remember that Nick Fury's brother, who we also could have just read about in this Fury one-shot if we wanted to, was very jealous of Nick, and then eventually sold himself to Hydra, but he discovered the Zodiac energy and the Zodiac key and became Scorpio as part of Zodiac to try to destroy S.H.I.E.L.D. and all that back in the late 60s and early 70s, whatever. But then Nick's nephew, Michael, decided to carry on the family legacy, and Nick and Wolverine had teamed up to fight Michael and his mom as Scorpio. And then when Wolverine kills his mom at the end, we find out, she reveals just before her death, that Michael is not Jake Fury's son, not his brother's son, but it's actually Nick's himself. Because one of the things that really pissed his brother off was at one point Nick realized that his brother's girlfriend was an evil spy, and so he seduced her as part of a sting mission. But it turns out during the seduction that he actually got her pregnant, but she had always told his brother Jake that they were pregnant. But then at the very end here, at the last story, we find out that Michael is really Nick's son, so Nick feels responsible for him. And his solution to try to resolve a lost father-son relationship is to enlist his son in S.H.I.E.L.D. So that's where we're going to pick up. So, first, I guess we should talk about the credits. So, this is going to be written by Howard Chaykin, who drew the previous story. Sean McManus is the artist. Gloria Vasquez is the colorist. Chris Eliopoulos is the letterer. And designed by Joe Kaufman. And the Scorpio design is pretty cool. So, heads up to Joe Kaufman, or hats off to Joe Kaufman for that. On the cover, we have the Scorpio design, but then Wolverine and Nick Fury diving through it. And this art by McManus, really through the whole thing, is 90s in all the wrong ways. It's kind of exaggerated in ways that aren't really very visibly pleasing and very muscle, like everyone's super muscly and just lots of 90s testosterone. It oozes out of both this cover and the interior art. So in this story, like I said, Nick's son now, Michael, is in S.H.I.E.L.D. and Nick gives him a hard time. He's not much of a better dad in S.H.I.E.L.D. than he was at his S.H.I.E.L.D. and really gives his son a rough time, so his son's not happy. And, oh, by the way, from that previous story also, the country that all happened in was this made-up country of Carpathia, a middle, kind of Eastern European country. So anyway, now in Carpathia, they have just finally bucked the monarchy and settled a new democracy, but then Hydra stages a coup. And then Michael wants to go home and help his country. So he leaves S.H.I.E.L.D. because he hates his dad. And he also steals the Scorpio key, which Nick was keeping at the S.H.I.E.L.D. base. And he goes back home, where, of course, Nick follows him. Now, Wolverine also shows up literally just because. In fact, Nick even asks him why he's there, and he goes, "There's trouble. I am drawn to trouble, bub." It's really terrible. They do fight Scorpio for lots and lots of pages, and other people fight, and there's lots of fighting. But they eventually somehow win him over. I think where Hydra overplayed their hand, so they use these two female spies to seduce Michael into his emotional immaturity, basically saying he has arrested development, and if girls flash their boobies at him, he'll do whatever they say. And that's kind of working, but they overplay their hand and use an LMD of his mom to try to sweet-talk him. And it's actually kind of working until Wolverine shows up and cuts her head off. And Michael at first is like, "You killed my mom again!" And he's really mad, but then he sees all the wires and stuff and realizes that he's being tricked. And so he decides to work with Nick and Wolverine begrudgingly to help save his country. And they do. So they use the Scorpio key, the Zodiac key to defeat Hydra. And actually blow up the base. And they just zap everyone to death. And then Scorpio becomes the new president in the end. Alright. So this story really misses Archie Goodwin. A very good writer, most of the time, who wrote the previous chapter. And this chapter misses him. Now, the guy who wrote this story, Howard Chaykin, the art really misses him. Because he drew the last story and is a much better writer. I'm sorry, that came out all wrong. He's a much better artist than he is a writer. Now, I don't know if he ever writes anymore after this or before this or whatever. I'm not real familiar with Chaykin writing stuff. I am very familiar with him drawing stuff. But yeah, no, it just feels like maybe some of these plot points could have been better if it had been the original creative team. But Chaykin carrying on the theme and the details as the writer doesn't really work, and the art doesn't work for me either. And also, much like we blitz through these comics, maybe this graphic novel is kind of a microcosm of how I did this whole episode. Like, the pacing is very just, and this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then we're done. Kind of like this episode has been. So maybe fitting that we end here. But I'm going to give Wolverine and Nick Fury's Scorpio Rising 2 out of 6 claws, and that's going to do it. So, I don't really know what's next. I have a lot up in the air. This episode is late because it took me so long to read all these comics. So we'll probably have another one really soon. It'll either be the Excalibros talking about the Hellfire Gala in current comics, or the next flashback will be Infinity Crusade, which will be another kind of high-volume, low-content, as Wolverine is definitely part of the event, but is not necessarily a major player. So I'll treat that as I treated Infinity Wars, and just kind of burn through it and hit the highlights and the stuff that I like. I am set to read through all that, at least as much as I can, and can get my hands on, either through physical copies or Marvel Unlimited. I don't think everything is in the app, and I know I don't have everything. So I may be missing some of it, but we'll see. I'm about to start reading that tonight as a recording, in the past, as when you're listening to this. But we're also heading towards episode 450 and our anniversary issue. I'm about to celebrate 9 years of the podcast. My goal is, depending on the timing, to make one of those, if not a joint effort, Fatal Attractions. But we have a few more things to get through still before we get to that. I just mentioned Infinity Crusade. Then we also have the Gambit miniseries and the Sabretooth miniseries, which I want to cover before we get to Fatal Attractions. So, but either way, I'm hoping sometime in August to have Fatal Attractions ready to go. I'm gonna see who I can pull to the table on that one. I'd like to be a pretty, well, I don't want to say anything in case I can't deliver, but I do have some things in the works for Fatal Attractions that I, fingers crossed, claws crossed, it works out. But anyway, that's kind of what's coming down soon-ish. So I hope you enjoyed this episode, even if the comics weren't all that great. Hope you at least had fun listening to me rant and rumble and ramble and whatever. But as always, guys, please stay safe and well out there. For the podcast to go snicked, you can like the Facebook page. Twitter is @snickcast. Show notes are at snickcast.podbean.com. And until next time, hugs and snicks, everyone. Bye-bye. And snacked.